This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here. Boy, the right wing, or the Reich wing, is having an absolute field day with Reverend Wright. And the story is getting very interesting on a bunch of different levels. And I'd like in this first hour to discuss this with you. I'd like to share my thoughts and take with you, the right-wing thoughts and take with you. And I'm telling you that there very much is one. And in fact, it's, let's just start with that.
Now, behind enemy lines.
Yeah, the American Spectator magazine is laying this thing out. Robert Stacey McCain, contributing reporter, writing. And now, keep in mind, this is how the right is going to characterize this thing. Writing, Obama's predicament now resembles nothing so much as that faced by George McGovern in July of 72. Now, keep in mind what happened in July of 72. In July of 72, McGovern had already selected his running mate, Tom Eagleton. He had asked him before he selected him, any skeletons in your closet? Eagleton said, no, nothing to worry about. And then in July 72, the press discovered that the vice presidential candidate for the presidency of the United States, the guy who was already running on the ticket with George McGovern, had had electroshock therapy a couple of times. He'd had electrodes wired up to his brain and gone, you know, he'd been treated for clinical depression. Now, broadly speaking, there's nothing wrong with being treated for clinical depression, and arguably there's nothing wrong with electroconvulsive therapy. I mean, we could have a debate about that, but... You know, at the time, certainly, in 72, it was, it still is, considered a treatment of last resort, but an effective treatment modality. But most Americans did not want somebody who'd had the shock treatment, particularly after the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie had just come out a few years earlier. I think it was like 5 years earlier before that, the Jack Nicholson's movie had come out, you know, with Nurse Ratched and the whole bit. One of the few movies in my life that I've actually walked out on. I was so grossed out by it. Louise and I went to see it together, and I just, you know, because I'd had a friend who had ECT, and I just, you know, I couldn't handle it, man. That was such an intense movie. But anyhow, so Americans had seen that movie, and then they discovered the guy who's running for vice president has had electroconvulsive shock therapy, and McGovern, of course, had to dump Eagleton and come up with an alternate running mate. And this is the take that the right wing is putting on this. Robert Stacey McCain and others are promoting this idea that what Obama is facing right now is a McGovern moment. In other words, they're trying to characterize Obama as McGovern. Now, there's a few problems with this argument. First of all, Wright is not Obama's running mate. But the Clinton campaign and the right wing spin machine are both doing everything they can to make Wright Obama's running mate. Yesterday, Obama further tried to distance himself from Wright, but he's trying to do so in a way that is appropriate, respectful, and gentle. He's refusing to trash Wright. Bob Herbert, writing in today's New York Times, says, you know, Wright is no political dummy. This guy's been around the block a few times. He's a very smart man. He understands politics. He's been in the public eye for many years. And this apparently is his revenge. He feels that Obama threw him under the bus, that Obama didn't support him vigorously enough, apparently. And so he's going to go out and support himself. I suspect that there's a book deal in the background. I mean, speaking as a New York Times best-selling author of, I have 19 books in print right now. I've written over 30, but I have 19 in print right now in 14 languages. And I'll tell you. Publishers have come to me, and they come to authors all the time, and they say, okay, we'll give you X for this book, and if you can come up with a publicity tie-in that's going to get you a lot of press, we'll give you Y. And so what may be, in the case of somebody as high-profile as Reverend Wright, what might be a $100,000 advance or a $500,000 advance could easily become a $1 million advance if Reverend Wright can demonstrate that he's able to get himself on 60 Minutes, that he's able to get himself on Good Morning America, those things that will sell a million books. Because a million books at hardcover is $1 million to $2 million in the pocket of the author. Hardcover books, you get $1 to $1.50, sometimes $2 a book. Paperback books, you get, 10 cents a copy, whatever it may be. This is how the author is paid. And sometimes you get that in advance. So I suspect that Reverend Wright, that there's an economic motive here and a political motive. But the bottom line is the right is using this. They're exploiting this guy. And now it comes out, and this is very strange, and you'll find this, it's pulled together. There's actually a link off Drudge to a New York Daily News article in which this is discussed and discussed in a fascinating fashion. Let me just get to it here. Jeremiah Wright, the colossal disaster, New York Daily News. This is Errol Lewis, his column today. He's talking about this woman, Dr. Barbara Reynolds, and I have a link to his column at tomhartman.com. I also have the photograph from the National Press Club website. The photograph, which is captioned, and I quote, Reverend Wright gets the inside story. It's a picture of an African-American woman leaning over and having a very close, intimate conversation with Reverend Wright in front of the National Press Club logo. Reverend Wright gets the inside story from Reverend Barbara A. Reynolds, the Speaker's Committee member. So she's on the Speaker's Committee, the National Press Club. The Speaker's Committee member who organized the Wright breakfast. So she's the one who got him in there. And what Errol Lewis did was said, okay, who is this woman? And either he knew personally or he just went and Googled her. But she has a website. Her website is titled ReynoldsNews.com, R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S, news.com. And as of yesterday, before his article broke, on that website it said, quote, this is Barbara Reynolds, the woman who organized Reverend Wright's speech yesterday at the National Press Club. It said, quote, my vote for Hillary in the Maryland primary was my way of saying thank you to Clinton and her husband for the successes of the Bill Clinton presidency. The last half of that sentence, actually after the thank you, is implicit from the context of her statements. And so this is from Errol Lewis's column in today's New York Daily News. So the question that is now going to come out is Barbara Reynolds, by the way, if you go to her website now, it is completely stripped. All the graphics are there. There is no text anywhere. ReynoldsNews.com. And there's a link to that from my website. You can find links to all of these things right at the top of our blog at tomhartman.com. And so, clearly, she stepped in this. Now, the question is, did she step in it intentionally? Well, obviously intentionally. She set up the breakfast with Reverend Wright. Did she set it up? And she's a Clinton supporter. So the question is, did she do this with the knowledge of the Clinton campaign? Or, for that matter, was she encouraged by the Clinton campaign, number one? And number two, how can Barack Obama avoid the right, as you see in today's American Spectator, Robert Stacey McCain's column, portraying Reverend Wright as if he was Barack Obama's running mate, using these Tom Eagleton, George McGovern analogies, even though Wright is not Obama's running mate. In fact, he's not even his pastor at the moment. Wright resigned from the church several years ago. And in the beginning, when Obama kicked off his campaign, he disinvited Wright, and that was probably the beginning of Wright feeling dissed. He disinvited him from coming to give the invocation for his opening gig. Now, there's a couple of things that Obama could do here. In the midst of this, Hillary Clinton is saying, how about a Lincoln-Douglas debate? Now, I think that what she's talking about, and from most of the press reports and from the clips that I've seen of her doing this, what she's really saying is Lincoln and Douglas met five times. There's a series of debates, or maybe it was nine times, whatever it was. They met a number of times. Why don't we have a series of debates? In my opinion, and if anybody from the Obama campaign is listening, here's what Barack Obama should do. He should say, Senator Clinton, I take you up on your offer of a Lincoln-Douglas debate. The format of the Lincoln-Douglas debate was that each party speaks for 1 hour, then each party has an hour and a half rebuttal, And then each party has a 30-minute summary, a half-hour summary. It's a total three-hour debate. And I'll do that. I will do that. Because he's a brilliant orator, and if he takes an hour to speak and an hour and a half to rebut, actually it'd be a six-hour debate, and a half-hour to wrap it up, I mean, I think he'd mop the floor. Although, on the other hand, Hillary Clinton is no slouch. She can speak very well, too. But that would be a format that I think would be fascinating. And it would immediately take all the attention away from this Reverend Wright discussion. Because he has to make it clear, this guy's not his running mate. Well, he's already made it clear. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
So today, Bob Herbert, writing about this, my guess, he says, is that Mr. Wright felt like he'd been thrown under the bus by an ungrateful congregant. What we're witnessing now is Reverend Wright's I'll Show You tour. I think he's got a book deal in this thing, as I said. I think that there's probably some money involved. But the bottom line, Reverend Jeremiah Wright went to Washington on Monday not to praise Barack Obama, but to bury him, to quote Bob Herbert's opening sentence. It's true. And no matter how much we may not want to talk about this, no matter how much we may say, it's not that big a deal. It's no different than Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson saying that 9/11 was God's punishment on New York for condoning homosexuality. In fact, although these two guys endorsed all the Republican candidates, they weren't members of their church for a long time. On the other hand, Barack Obama is not running with Reverend Wright. He is not his running mate. So here you've got the Wright trying to make him the Tom Eagleton to Barack Obama. He's not. It's an imperfect metaphor. It's not just an imperfect metaphor. It's a wrong metaphor. So how does Barack Obama change the subject? How does he break out of this thing? He has to, number one, say, and he has said strongly, this guy isn't my guy anymore. Sorry. You know, and he, number one, not even sorry. He's not my guy. You know, what he has to say in those areas, I totally repudiate. And number two, and just, he has to get this behind him in a way that it's really behind him. Because if he is the nominee, the Republicans will try to bring this up. And he has to be able to say, you know, that's old news now. And this coming out now might actually be a good thing because it will make it old news. In October, November, December, in October, November, when people are actually really seriously paying attention to the election campaign. But the other thing is that most people don't know who Barack Obama is. He's being defined now by the media and in the media, and this is not the way he wants to be defined. Tony in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Tony, you're a former member of Reverend Wright's church.
Yes, I am.
So tell us, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, first of all, I think people need to, you know, I don't understand the logic of a lot of the white media and a lot, just a lot of white people in general, in the sense that you have a bumbling idiot in the White House right now that can be associated with the Bin Laden family. Nobody's, and that's killing people every day. That's no big issue. But then you want to take issue with a man that took 87 members and turned into an 88,000 member church. Okay,
yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the fact of the matter is George Bush's father was having breakfast with Bin Laden's brother on 9/11.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you want to talk about some weird stuff.
Weird logic.
Yeah.
Fuzzy math or however you want to. And my point is this. You know, what is it that, you know, are people afraid that Barack is going to jump out with a black power sign and a dashiki and a picking his hair, you know, that's
the answer, Tony, is yes. You've got a bunch of white folks out there who have had very little contact with African Americans in their lives. You've got a very racist element in the white community. And yes, they actually, those caricatures are real in the minds of a small minority of whites.
But they're not going to vote for him anyway. So that's my point.
I agree.
The forward-thinking people that are ready to make a change in this country, stand up, make sure that the, because Jeremiah Wright is just standing up for himself. And let me tell you something. He's written several books already. This is not about money. More than likely that Reynolds woman may have been a personal friend. Who knows? But she was giving him an opportunity. Can you imagine him being in his place? of building his community and speaking out and being a Marine and giving an IV to Lyndon Johnson, and then they want to demote you to sounding like a maniac.
I don't think Barack Obama has dissed him. I mean, Barack Obama was very respectful toward him, and what he is doing, and he knows it. He's got to know this. This guy is brilliant. Reverend Wright, I saw part of his interview in Bill Moore. This guy is really smart. He knows that what he's doing right now is damaging Barack Obama.
No, I don't think so. You know what? I think he's saying, just like he said in the thing, I'm a pastor, he's a politician. I am not his so-called spiritual leader
understands the American media well enough to know that they're going to take things out of context. They're going to, he's making fun of John Kennedy's accent.
But how can you fight that? No matter. Barack,
I think he should have waited until after the election.
But it's not still going to matter because it's still, they're going to always, wherever now Reverend Wright goes, and I would suggest people look up his book, What Makes You So Strong, Sermons of Joy and Strength. That's what people need to read.
Yeah.
And that was written by Jeremiah Wright. And that's what I'm just saying. That's the logic. I mean, the fact that we have flesh tone Band-Aids and it's pink when 90% of the flesh on the earth is brown. Okay,
That's
a logic. It's like
you can't
fight it. No matter what he does, no matter what he says, no matter how both of them are reacting to this thing, that type of logic, that type of mentality, you can't get past. So what the forward-thinking people need to do is stick together, get out here.
So Tony, we got about 20 seconds left before we got to take a break at the bottom of the hour. The press is doing what they're doing, and you and I both look at it and say it's terrible, but it's happening. What should Barack Obama say or do, in your opinion, right now?
And now there's nothing else he can say. It's just like Jesse Jackson is going to pay for the Jaime remark for the rest of his life. It's no matter what he says, he's already said.
I think he needs to change the conversation. He needs to do something rather substantial and something fairly bold to get the news cycle to change. And perhaps saying, I'll do a one-hour debate. With Lincoln Douglas, I speak for an hour, Hillary speaks for an hour. Let's do that. That would flip it very, very quickly.
I hope so.
Me too. Tony,
thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at
34 minutes past the hour, noon 34 on the East Coast, 9:34 in the morning on the West Coast, and in 30 minutes or so, at the top of the second hour of our program, the former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, will be with us for a half hour to discuss, I don't want to characterize what he's going to say, but I'm going to ask, how do we get Karl Rove marched out of Texas, frog marched out of Texas in chains, to paraphrase Joe Wilson? And this is a conversation that I've been looking forward to for a long time. And in our third hour, I want to get back to this topic and some of the other news of the day. But right now, the question, what is the status and damage of this? I'm telling you, the right is out there. I have gotten at least a half a dozen different emails from official right-wing sources, from the American Spectator magazine, from a number of conservative websites. The storyline that the right wing is peddling as hard as they can, hoping that the corporate media will pick it up, is that this is Barack Obama's George McGovern moment. I don't believe that to be true. Not for a second. He has not picked Jeremiah Wright as his running mate, like McGovern had picked Tom Eagleton. It's not even close. But that's the way the right wing is peddling it. And so, what's going to happen if the corporate media picks that stupid storyline up? How do we push back on that? And then Bob Herbert, himself African American, and clearly very concerned about this race, opens his op-ed in today's New York Times, and Bob Herbert, one of the really important and brilliant voices in America, opens his op-ed. The Reverend Jeremiah Wright went to Washington on Monday not to praise Barack Obama, but to bury him. He says, this was totally intentional. This guy knew what he was doing. He's no dummy. He wasn't just trying to redeem his reputation. There's certainly plenty of time to do that. He went out there to destroy Barack Obama. How does Obama respond? And how is it that, you know, white candidates who have been associated with Falwell and Robertson forever, who right after 9/11 said,
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
You're talking about 9/11,
I totally
the day after.
And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do.
And so Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, we deserved it.
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve.
Now, actually, to put this in context, these guys have both now apologized for those comments. Reverend Wright, to the best of my knowledge, has not apologized for what he said and, in fact, has defended it. And I think, you know, in context, it's very defensible. But that's not... There's a subtlety and a nuance to that that is not going to make it down to the average voter in America, particularly the average white voter in America, who does not understand the experience of African Americans in this country or of the African American church. It's just not going to happen. So how does Barack Obama respond to this? I think number one, change the subject. Hillary Clinton's running around saying, let's have debates. Yeah, okay, let's do a Lincoln-Douglas debate. You speak for a half hour, I'll speak for a half hour, then you have a half hour rebuttal, and I have a half hour rebuttal, then we each have a half hour closing statement, something like that. You know, let's do it the way that Lincoln and Douglas did it. Yeah. 1-866-303-2270. By the way, I mentioned Don Siegelman is going to be in the next hour. Tomorrow morning, we had a caller, Gerald, last Friday, African-American, he called up and he said, you know, what are you guys afraid of? What are you white people afraid of? We're going to get the head of the KKK on tomorrow at the beginning of the show, and I intend to ask him that question. And also just want to let you know, our listeners in Coos Bay, that this weekend I will be there along with Secretary of State Bill Bradley and Steve Novick, candidate for the United States Senate, and in the Democratic primary, the Coos County Democrats are organizing a fundraiser. Tickets are $25 if purchased before the 15th. And so check it out. James, New Paltz, New York. Hey, James.
Good afternoon, Tom. Or I should say good morning on the West Coast. But thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to talk about something that Jeremiah Wright said that got a lot of people disturbed. His comments about AIDS. Are you familiar with something that happened at Tuskegee Syphilis Study?
I'm very familiar with it,
and
yes, where African-American men were not treated for syphilis, were told that they were being treated, and for decades were observed, simply. And, you know, it was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing.
Okay. That study had a very negative impact of people of that generation. In fact,
sure.
The American Journal of Public Health in 1991, I actually put this on a blog on your website, talks about it created a real distrust for public health people, for people to cooperate, and it allowed a lot of the AIDS theories that Reverend Wright articulated to formulate.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I agree with it, and I'm not saying it's justifiable, but I think what we should be doing is let's talk about the Tuskegee study, if we can, and see, you know, shock people into saying, hey, you know, there's a reason why people think the way they do. And one more thing, if I can.
No, there's a reason why black people think the way they
do. Yeah. For example, in New York,
to the Tuskegee study.
Yeah, but I'm saying as far as AIDS in general, I mean, you have
right.
people, I don't know if I can mention his name, but there's a guy named Gary Noel who to this day claims
sure.
that the virus doesn't cause AIDS.
Yeah, no, he's written a book about it.
Yeah. So.
And in fact, he's been quoted by, you know, he was quoted by the head of one of the countries in
South
Africa. Yeah, in South Africa. But it's wrong. But yeah, James, I get the point and thank you very much. It's just, you know, nonetheless, this is political poison, and in a way, I think you could argue that this is swift boating Barack Obama. Frank in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Frank.
Hey, You know, you had the caller, Tony, from L.A. on the phone, who was a member of Reverend Wright's church.
Mm-hmm.
And she made some comments that came, rang so clear to me about what the exact problem is with Reverend Wright and his church. She said the white media, she said that one in 10 black people or people on the planet is white, or 90% of the people on the planet are black, which is completely untrue. I mean, she's obviously a racist, and I'm not surprised because she's been brought up in that environment. And that's precisely...
Frank, you're sounding like an angry white guy. I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is that the majority of people on the planet are not white. It's not, obviously it's not 90-10, but the majority of people on the planet are not Caucasians. The majority of the people on the planet are brown or yellow, or, you know, what used to be called yellow, Asian, and or what used to be called red, Native American.
Well, she said, no, she said 90% of the people on the planet had brown skin, which is not true. Go to China and tell us he's that. Okay,
yeah,
but that's obviously racist when you say the media, the white media, and
the media, the media in this country is white. It is lily white, and it is controlled by white guys who control white corporations, and it's mostly white faces on it, way out of proportion to the, I think it's 17-18% of the population that is African American in the United States. In fact, up until the last few months, the last 6 months or so, when there was a serious and viable African American presidential candidate, you very rarely saw African American commentators on American news shows.
Well, let me give you my explanation for why Reverend Wright is out here now sabotaging Obama's campaign. Okay? I believe that he's a race peddler, and he's made millions of dollars being a race peddler. And him and the rest of the race peddlers out there who are selling the black community and making millions of dollars off the fact that black people have been oppressed in this country and trying to perpetuate that as long as they can.
Frank, the guy's not a millionaire. He hasn't made millions of dollars. And the bottom line is that when you have a community that on an ongoing basis is experiencing oppression, you still cannot, as an African American, reliably flag down a taxi in New York City, even if you're wearing a business suit. You cannot, as an African American, know that you will be able to rent an apartment or buy a house in most communities in the United States.
Are not white Americans. Most of them are foreigners in New York City.
Doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that racism is alive and well in the United States, and particularly racism against African Americans. And so when you have an oppressed community and that community says, hey, one of our issues is the oppression, you can't call them racist because they're talking about the issue that one of the predominant issues that they're having to deal with every day of their lives. I'm assuming you're a white guy, you and I don't have to deal with that every day of our lives, so we don't go around talking about being white guys every day. But if that was the main thing that was in my face every time I walked out in the street, I think I'd talk about it a hell of a lot more.
What is Reverend Wright going to do if a black man gets elected president? How is he going to sell?
I don't think this is that simple.
If a black man gets elected president,
I hopefully he would celebrate it, Frank. But I really don't think this is that simple. I think Bob Herbert, who is an African American himself, I'm willing to trust his take on this. That this is Reverend Wright going off. It's all about him. And he doesn't care what kind of damage it does to Barack Obama. And I think that that's a tragedy. I think that frankly is a tragedy. But I understand what he said, and to a large extent, I would defend it if it was me. But I'm not running for president. And Barack Obama they are both sides, the Reich and Hillary Clinton are using this as a political issue. And it's frankly, it's not even the big issue. Denny in Ohio. Hey, Denny.
Hey, Tom. Hey, you know.
Hey, Denny, I'm sorry. I missed a time cue. Can you hold on for a second here?
Sure.
We got to take a break. I'll bring you right back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you on Air America Radio. 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com. AirAmerica.com. Stick around at the top of the next hour. Governor Don Siegelman will be with us. A lot to cover today.
Is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
Life's like a road that you travel on. There's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand. Sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar. Come ride with me to the distant shore. We don't hesitate to break down. Garden gate, there's not much time left today. Yeah. Life is a highway.
5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-303-2270. Denny in Ohio. Sorry about that, Denny. Welcome back.
Oh, no problem, Tom. I'll be brief. Hey, I'm out here in Ohio, and, man, gas is $3.65 a gallon today. I could give a rat's rear end about the Reverend Wright. I think that the bottom line is people are sick and tired of what's going on right now, and the Republicans can try whatever they want to try. I think that people are finally waking up, and I'm ashamed to say our state helped get Bush elected, and I think that it's going to turn around big time this time. I just see too much frustration in the people out here and with these gas prices. And I don't care if he's black, blue, pink, or orange, or what color he is. Anything would beat what we have in there right now.
Amen. Denny, well said. And what we need, but what Barack Obama needs to be doing right now is changing the dialogue. And I think that some sort of a bold statement by him that has nothing to do with Reverend Wright would do that. And perhaps taking debates with Hillary Clinton, if he did it in ways that would benefit, that would work to his advantage, or if not, I mean, you know, whatever, that might be a possibility. Maybe there's some other possibilities that some, you know, really smart political guy has thought about. But I'm telling you, the right is pushing this really hard. I saw the same thing happen when the swift voting of John Kerry happened. I was getting all these same emails from these same groups, and we were all looking at this and saying, nobody's going to pick this stuff up. Nobody's going to take this seriously. And I'll bet you this afternoon that on the cable news shows and on the commentator shows on television, on the networks that are run virtually entirely by conservative white guys and major transnational corporations, that the discussion is going to be about Reverend Wright. And I think it's wrong. I'll be the first to say it. I think it's wrong. And this is the way the game is being played. They have to figure out a way to rebut that, as it were. Mary in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Tom. Can I have an intra-family squabble with you? Because I'm a Democrat.
Sure.
And I respect you. Is it fair to say that you consider yourself, you're on the more far left spectrum? Do you agree with that?
I don't know what that means, Mary, but probably most people on the right would characterize me that
okay.
way.
Okay. Well, I know those labels are problematic, but I think I'll vote for Barack Obama. I do not believe he is our best candidate, but I believe that there is some legitimacy surrounding this issue, not because Barack Obama is anti-American. I don't believe for a moment he's anti-American. Not that Barack Obama foments racial tension. I don't for a moment believe he does that. But there are serious questions around why Barack Obama would sit in that church for 20 years. There are issues around judgment. He tells us he has superior judgment.
Because that was an extraordinary, and still is, an extraordinary church that has a substantial African-American participation. But, I mean, he was working in that community. He was interacting with those people. You're talking about a guy who built a church from, fewer than 100 people to some, you know, tens of thousands. I think it was 60,000 people, 70,000 people over the years have been members of that church.
He's incredibly talented and scholarly.
A major big deal church. And these two speeches about AIDS and about, goddamn America, right, saying that, these were absolutely anomalous. You know, his book about hope and sermons of hope and joy, the vast majority, you know, Reverend Wright, the vast majority of his speeches that at least that I've looked at, and I haven't, you know, I don't pretend to be any kind of scholar of his work, but I've certainly read, you know, a number of them on the web, are basically not that different from those of the guy who did the Crystal Cathedral, Robert Schiller. You know, they're inspirational. They're you can lift yourself up. They're let's go, let's do positive.
Do you find what he said at the press club, his Q&A, problematic?
I do.
So these aren't anomalous. And the other issue, your previous caller said that he's wealthy. He is a wealthy man. He's been given a $1 million home as his retirement by his church, and he sells his sermons to his parishioners.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, in Chicago, a million-dollar home doesn't make you wealthy. It makes you, you know, well off, but not wealthy.
Very few ministers sell sermons.
I guarantee you, he has fewer assets than Chris Matthews makes in salary in 3 months.
But what point is that? The point is he is a wealthy guy, and that is, he is not living like Mother Teresa.
So, therefore, I mean, we should dislike people because they've done well in the world?
Reasons to act the way he acts, and he is not monolithically the black church.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary, I agree with you on that. I'm not sure what you're taking me to task for here. You said you
wanted to disagree
with me. What
I'm taking you to task for is there are legitimate issues around this guy that give people pause. And I'm a Democrat, and I'll vote for Barack Obama. But he's not our strongest candidate based on his poor judgment to be aligned with this.
That's the argument that the Clinton campaign is making. That's the argument that they are making. And I think that that's the problem, is for white people who don't understand the experience of oppression in this country and who have never had any interaction with the black church in this country, to say...
I'm a woman, and I understand discrimination.
No.
And let me tell you that a woman who's over 40 can't get a taxi in New York sometimes.
Oh, come on, because taxi drivers are afraid you're going to stick them up?
No, because we have a sexualized view of women, and women get discriminated against in any number of ways.
Mary, I grant you, sexism is alive.
Politically.
Yeah, I grant you, sexism is alive and active in the United States. And in fact, I've said many times, I think in some ways it's as or more pernicious than racism. But that's not one of them. That's not one of them.
My point is these are silly things. If you can't criticize a person because he's a member of a group that's discriminated against, that's absurd. Hillary Clinton should be criticized.
I am not failing to criticize Reverend Wright for what he said yesterday at the National Press Club. I don't think he should have gone. My whole point was he should have waited until after the election. But your points are basically the Hillary Clinton campaign speech. And frankly, I reject it, number one. And number two, but my concern is that many whites in America, and the majority of the electorate in the United States is white, many whites in America aren't going to understand it at the level of nuance that I think many of us do here on this show.
You're in the Democracy Zone.
Democracy
with
Zone.
Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. The Tom Hartman Program here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming all over the planet from AirAmerica.com. Jo Wilson, the husband of Valerie Plame, a former U.S. ambassador, once laid out a sentiment that I think many of us share.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And
trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
In other words, he knew something was up. He knew something was up. And the evidence is mounting. Don Siegelman is with us. Donald Eugene Siegelman, he was the only person in the history of Alabama to be elected to serve in all four of Alabama's top statewide elected offices, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, and Governor. And Don Siegelman, welcome to the program.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. First of all, I want to say you're one of my political heroes. You ran a campaign in which, from looking at it from the outside, it looked to me like the election was stolen from you. You pushed back afterwards. You carried on a good fight. The Karl Rove machine came after you, and you've continued to stand up. And we have been talking about you on this show for months and months, and I am just frankly honored to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I want to say thank you both to you and your listeners, because I think many of them have taken action, have called or emailed or written to John Conyers and other members of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. And those actions by those people who listen to this show have, one, I think, had an impact on directly on my case, but more importantly, has inspired the Inspector General of the Department of Justice and Chairman Conyers to dig in and to look for the truth. And I believe, as we heard on your show just a minute ago, all roads lead to Rove.
Yep.
And when they dig up the evidence that was buried when Alberto Gonzalez and Rove left the White House, they're going to find evidence of abuse of power and misuse of the Department of Justice, using it as a political tool to win elections, subverting our democracy. And they're going to find that, I believe, that Karl Rove provided an umbrella of protection over those people who were operating to abuse the Department of Justice. And because it just doesn't make sense why these people would violate the law with impunity unless they knew that their bosses or someone higher up had given the green light for them to do so.
Right. They knew that their backside was covered. And when this whole who's being fired in the Justice Department among the prosecutors scandal broke, my comment was, I'm not so concerned about the guys who got fired because they wouldn't get along and go along. I'm concerned about the ones who are staying in power. And in fact, if I understand this correctly, you were being prosecuted by a woman whose husband was the campaign manager for the Republican who ran against you for governor, and in the middle of the night in one county, because of a voting machine malfunction, after the election had apparently already been called in your favor, suddenly in the middle of the night, when there were nobody except Republicans standing around, they discovered a couple thousand more votes and said, oh, yeah, no, Don Siegelman actually lost.
Do I have that right? You have it right. They electronically shifted votes from my column to my Republicans column.
To Bob Riley's column.
I believe it was, to Bob Riley's column. And oddly enough, it didn't affect a single down-ballot race. So they took 5,000 or 6,000 votes of mine and shifted it over to Bob Riley. And when they counted everybody else's votes, the shift at the top, which logically would have made a difference at the bottom.
Sure.
Had no impact whatsoever.
So the people running for the lesser state offices, the folks who voted Democratic right down the ticket, all of a sudden at the very top of the ticket were, well, I'm going to vote for every Democrat except Don Siegelman. I'll flip that over to Riley. And only in this one area, in this one county, on this one set of machines that was discovered in the middle of the night by the Republicans.
A couple of other interesting things, Tom, since you brought this up. But the two people who either were given credit or who gave themselves credit for stealing the election or swinging the election to my Republican opponent for catching this electronic glitch, as they called it.
Yeah.
One was Karl Rove's business partner. Her name was Kitty McCullough, also known as Kelly. I can't remember what her second name was, but she had a different marriage.
But she's the one who discovered the extra votes that caused you to lose and caused Bob Riley to win.
And the other person was a guy named Dan Gans, who right after that went to work for an Abramoff, Tom DeLay-related company, a group called the Alexander Strategy Group. And he claimed credit on his website that he was responsible for his because he had an expertise in electronic ballot security. Rose fingerprints are from start to finish are on this case. You mentioned the fact that the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney who began the federal investigation and whose office prosecuted my case, was the wife of my opponent's campaign manager. But Bill Canary was also Andrew Card's assistant, and he worked for the NRC, and he was the field coordinator for the Bush-Quayle campaign in '92. He was also a 25-year associate with Karl Rove, and they had been partners in political activity. They ran the Bush 2 to 92 campaign. So
this is Bill Canary, the guy who ran Bob Riley's campaign, the Republican who ran against you, who only won because they found these electronic votes in the middle of the night.
Right.
And he is this old-time Republican operative, a longtime partner with George W. Bush, and his wife, Lyra Canary, was the federal prosecutor who was not fired in this thing, but instead was retained, and she was the one who prosecuted you.
Right. She was the one that we forced her recusal because of the obvious conflicts of interest. But when we requested copies of her recusal papers, the Department of Justice has failed and refused to turn those over. There's some over 500 pages of documents that the Department of Justice still to this day has refused to turn over either to us or to the House Judiciary Committee.
Wow.
You have to wonder what's in those documents if they're refusing to turn them over.
Well, and then there's the perhaps even much larger issue, and that is that Karl Rove apparently learned the lessons of Watergate. That is to say, you know, Rosemary Woods and her 18-minute gap wasn't quite enough. And so they've nuked 5 million emails now. They actually took the machines down and had the hard drives crushed.
Yeah, you know, I always say that he learned two lessons. He worked under Don Segretti, and Rove has been given credit for a lot of the dirty tricks, even going back to the, you know, 72 campaign. But I think he learned two things. That one, that you don't have to create a secret plumber's unit, you know, to investigate and to cause trouble for your opponents. If you can appoint U.S. attorneys and have the Department of Justice do it for you. And then the second thing, just like you mentioned, that he learned is that you don't leave tapes around, you destroy evidence. And that's exactly what has been done.
Right. Now, in our conversation, you have suggested that the original election that you lost to Bob Riley by a few thousand votes in the middle of the night may have been stolen. That is a part of the story that has been treated as if it was radioactive by the corporate press. To the best of my knowledge, I have never heard that in any of the official corporate news reports. Have you asserted that before? Have you been saying this all along, or is this?
We have been saying it. We have been saying it since the night of the election. We won the election when the votes were counted and were declared, and then in one county, which is controlled by Republicans, after midnight, when everybody went home, when the poll workers were sent home, when the media was gone, they decided to electronically recount these votes and shifted the votes and certified the vote illegally the next day. Interestingly, Karl Rove's client stepped in, the attorney general stepped in and said, if anybody tries to hand count these votes, we're going to put them in jail. We had initially had a green light from the local Republicans in this one area that we could come in and hand count these ballots where the electronic shift occurred.
But then the attorney general said no. Sir, can you stick around over the break and we'll continue this conversation?
Sure will. Thank you.
Great. We're talking with Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, former secretary of state, attorney general, lieutenant governor as well of Alabama, about his prosecution and how this all played out and how Karl Rove may have been, in all probability, certainly involved in this. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. The True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman.
Even if your hands are shaking and your faith is broken, even as the eyes are closing, do it with a heart wide open. Why? Say what you need to say.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Don Siegelman, the governor, former governor of Alabama, is on the line with us. His website, by the way, Don Siegelman, is spelled S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N, donsiegelman.org. I just updated the link on our homepage to it, so if you go to tomhartman.com, and you can click right straight into it if you don't remember it, although it shouldn't be that hard to remember, Don Siegelman, I before E, except after C or whatever. Don Siegelman, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. We were talking before the break about the election being stolen in 2002.
Yes, sir.
And there's a new book out by Mark Crispin Miller, a New York college professor, called "Loser Take All." And there are two articles in there. One by Larissa Alexandrovna of Ross, who writes for Raw Story, and a professor from Auburn University, both of which point to the fact that it's a mathematical impossibility for the election not to have been stolen.
Right. And Larissa has been on the show a number of times. She's a friend, and Mark Crispin Miller is a dear old friend who actually has written a foreword to one of my books. And we've discussed that book and that case with him. So my listeners are quite familiar with that, but it certainly bears re-mentioning, absolutely. And
the, One other point. We talked about the recount that we had requested. We wanted to hand count the votes. It was stopped by Karl Rove's client, who was then the Attorney General. But also, it should be noted that it was Karl Rove's client, then Attorney General, who began the state investigation just a few days after I did a fly around with Al Gore, being the first Democrat, well, first governor to endorse Al Gore in his election back in '99.
Hmm. So, I mean, this sounds, I mean, this just stinks to high heaven of just this huge, well, not huge, but the very clear Republican conspiracy to rig an election. Everybody, all the Republicans are always talking about election, about voter fraud. You know, holy cow, we can't have people without ID. You know, like my mother, who's pushing 80 and doesn't have a driver's license. She can't vote now with this Supreme Court decision yesterday. That's voter fraud. But actually what we're, you know, the real problem we have in America, in my opinion, is election fraud, and you were a victim of it. I'm wondering, the mainstream corporate media, And I suppose, you know, hopefully we're part of that in some small way. I mean, we've got 3 million listeners. We're on some very, very large radio stations all around the country right now, people listening to you from all over the country. But when you go on MSNBC or CBS or something like that, do they simply edit that part out when you talk about it? Do they not ask you about it? Do they say don't talk about it? I mean, why was that never the part of those kinds of stories in that media?
Well, I really believe that people just don't want to believe bad things really do happen in America. You know, we want to believe that decisions to go to war are made on what's, you know, in our best national interest. Or we want to believe that our justice system works fairly and even-handedly, and that innocent people don't get convicted. We want to believe that our elections, as opposed to the elections in other countries, are conducted fairly and honestly. But, you know, when we take a close look at what is going on, we find that maybe things are awry.
Yeah.
And I think that we had, you know, Karl Rove has been up to no good for his entire, well, maybe not his entire life, but since he was a teenager, anyway.
Certainly his entire political career.
And, you know, I think that, you know, it is his attitude that you gain and retain power by any means necessary. And I think he has carried it to this extreme that we are beginning to see uncovered by courageous congressmen like John Conyers and Republicans like Arlen Specter, who's spoken out on this case, and Grant Woods, a former Republican attorney general, and Jill Simpson, who's a Republican lawyer whistleblower from Alabama. You know, this case would not have been exposed if it had not been for the heroic actions of Republicans coming forward saying, hey, something's wrong here. This is America. We can't let this go on.
Now, when you were convicted of appointing a guy to a hospital commission who'd already been there in the past, a guy who had given money to your campaign, not your campaign, but to a campaign to have a lottery to help education in your state, all of which is just normal political stuff. I mean, if this is what politicians are convicted for, there's not a politician in America who's safe. When you were convicted of this, they immediately took you to prison. They did not allow you to have a press conference. They did not allow you to post bail. Do I have that right?
Well, not only that, but now when I have been told by the 11th Circuit that I'm, quote, free on bond,
right.
I have to give 30 days notice to a different state. Like if I want to go to New Orleans to visit a journalist, I have to give 30 days written notice before they will even my travel request. And you talk about a chilling effect on freedom of speech. Once you're out on bond, you ought to be able, unless you're at flight risk, it seems to me, you ought to be able to speak to the media or raise money for your legal defense or petition Congress for a redress of grievances without having to go give 30 days notice to a judge to get his approval for you to speak.
This is horrific. Governor Siegelman, any chance you could stick around for just a few minutes longer?
Oh, sure, I'd be happy to.
Great. We have about a five-minute break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll pick up the conversation. I still have a couple more questions for you. Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Don't get distracted.
24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman radio program, live coast to coast on Air America Radio. And our guest, Governor Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, in fact, the only person in the history of that state to have served all four top statewide elected offices, secretary of state, attorney general, lieutenant governor, and governor, certainly knows the state, knows politics, knows what of his he speaks. His website, Don Siegelman, I-before-E-S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N.org. And Governor Siegelman, first of all, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be on. I'm just excited that somebody else other than me is interested in what's been going on in Alabama. And it has been so uplifting. When I was in prison in Oakdale, Louisiana, my spirits were uplifted by my friends and the letters and prayers that they sent, and it was uplifted by John Conyers and what he was doing, and my own Congressman Arturo Davis, but especially uplifted when the national media started spotlighting the injustices, beginning with Karl Rove, but also focusing on Jack Abramoff and what, Abramoff was, I think, Rove's bagman, and they were bringing truckloads of casino cash into Alabama. According to the McCain report, at least one statement in there indicates that as much as $13 million in Indian casino money came into Alabama to begin to defeat me in 1998, and then to defeat the lottery in 99, and then to defeat me again and help elect Rove's friend and Bill Canary's friend and client, Bob Riley, in 2002. It's that's another story. I think one of the people who will emerge as a hero in this story of all roads leading to Rove is Henry Waxman, because he is mm-hmm. he is following the money, following Abramoff, and if you look at where that money went, a lot of it came into Alabama. Tom DeLay's money came through Alabama as well, and it's his close relationship with Rove, and the fact that they were pumping millions of dollars into Alabama to defeat me, beginning in 1998 with Ralph Reed coordinating the Christian Coalition using casino money. And it's also interesting that there's been no federal investigation of Ralph Reed's involvement, of Grover Norquist's involvement, and the fact that they were used as conduits by Rove and Abramoff for trying to destroy me and something I will never forgive them for is denying our children a chance to go to college for free, because we would have won that education lottery election in 1999 had it not been for the millions of dollars that they pumped in here.
So would it be safe to say that you're of the opinion that when they stole the election from you in the middle of the night, switching electronic votes in 2002, that one major part of their motivation was to hide their own crimes that had to do with basically money laundering and electioneering that was, if not illegal, at least inappropriate?
It's not questionably not illegal. It was definitely money laundering. It was definitely illegal. Mm. It was illegal under Alabama law. It was illegal under federal law. And, the hypocrisy of the president of the National Christian Coalition in Alabama for three elections using casino money to defeat me, who is a proponent of a lottery to get a sex for education, is in and of itself a cause for a congressional hearing to be called to investigate that. Right. And I think Henry Waxman is on the trail to something, and I'd want to encourage those of you who are out in California to give him a pat on the back and encourage him to stay on the trail until he finds that road that will lead to Rove.
Well, we are live right at this moment on at least a half a dozen stations in California, including Los Angeles and San Francisco, some of the major population centers. So I would encourage all of my listeners to go to callcongress.org. You'll find a complete list of 800 numbers you can use to call and ask for your member of the House of Representatives and your two senators and also Henry Waxman's office. You just dial the 800 number, and that'll get you to the switchboard and just say, hey, let me talk to Henry Waxman's office. I'd like to say something. And say, Governor, exactly what should people say to their elected
representatives? Well, one for Henry Waxman, again, with Henry Waxman and John Conyers, to say, you know, one, to say thank you, all inspectors to say thank you, but also to encourage them to stay in the arena and keep fighting for the truth, that we, you know, the American people, no matter how ugly the truth might be, we deserve to know what it is.
Now,
and that goes for the war in Iraq. It goes for stealing elections. It goes for the abuse of the Department of Justice and, you know, other things that get under our skin. But, you know, right now we're talking about digging up the evidence that was buried when Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez rushed out of the White House and the Department of Justice.
And destroyed 5 million emails on the way out. One of the questions that our chat room has just, we're in a live chat room during the show, and there's just everybody saying, how can I help Don Siegelman? My perhaps too glib answer, but I suspect it's right, is go to donsiegelman.org. You, I'm assuming, have some sort of a legal defense fund there.
I have a very deficient legal defense fund, and I would certainly appreciate any contribution that anyone would be willing to make. It's been a very expensive and costly ordeal for me and my family, and you know, we're not whining. And, you know, if serving 9 months in prison and spending every dollar I've got will lead to Karl Rove's, you know, the exposure of Karl Rove's involvement, it will be worth every day in prison and every penny I've spent. But yet,
well, and it's not even the personal thing about Karl Rove. I mean, we're seeing the breach of the Constitution.
He has subverted our constitutional rights, and certainly subverted my constitutional right, my Fifth Amendment right to a fair trial. But it's not just me. We've spent a good part of this conversation talking about my case, but there are other cases around the country. This is not about me. It's about America. And what Karl Rove has done here will make Watergate look like child's play. We just simply have to. And this is, again, it's not a Democratic or Republican thing. It's just, you know, Republicans also are aware and are concerned and are fighting for the truth here.
Are there other cases that you have firsthand knowledge of, Governor Siegelman?
Well, I'm just talking about the ones that we've read about in the news. No, I don't have any new revelations, but certainly it appears that Karl Rove has had a hand in other cases, and
right.
You know, we just Congress needs to keep pursuing it. Henry Waxman needs to be encouraged. Arl Inspector needs to be encouraged. Congressman Conyers needs to be thanked, and they all need to be encouraged to stay in the arena and keep fighting for the truth.
You're an attorney, and you understand the Constitution of the United States, and you're a governor, a former prosecutor, former state attorney general. I respect your legal opinion. If George W. Bush, on the way out of office, pardons Karl Rove for all crimes past, present, or future, whatever, you know, if world without end, amen, in much the same way that Reagan did with a number of people, that Jerry Ford did, for that matter, with Richard Nixon. And the next administration, you know, Bill Clinton, basically, when he came into power, he said, we're not going to continue prosecuting the Iran-Contra stuff. We're going to look forward. I think that those were huge mistakes. And
I agree with you.
How do we get around that? How do we prevent Bush from pardoning Rove and all these other folks who are involved in these crimes, or B, if he does pardon them, what legal recourse is there, or even just intellectual recourse, just exposing their crimes, even if we can't prosecute them? What can the American people do? What can Congress do?
Well, he can't pardon himself, so that's the good news.
You think this goes all the way to Bush?
I'm talking about Bush. Yes, I mean, I think one could infer from that an attempt to obstruct justice, and I think that that would be a huge mistake on his part, politically, legally, and otherwise. There have been presidents who have been impeached after they've left office. And
does this, in your opinion, does this crime go all the way to the White House, to George W. Bush himself?
We don't know yet where it goes, and that's why I think, you know, when I said we need to encourage Congress and and also members of the Senate, courageous senators like Arlen Specter, who's been speaking up on this to, you know, dig for the truth. We're entitled to know what the truth is, regardless of how bad or ugly it might appear, or how it may make our system of justice look. You know, we need to know who is behind it, so they can be punished, so they can be held accountable, so we can make a clear and unequivocal statement that this is not going to be tolerated anymore. And that's why, coming back to what you said about President Clinton making, you know, saying that we're not going to pursue that, I think was a mistake, because it would have sent a strong message.
Governor, we're talking with Governor Don Siegelman. If you're up for it, I'd like to, if you can stick around for just another break, I'd like you to recap what's happened and your case. Are you available to do that?
I will be here when you get back.
Great. Okay. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, live coast to coast here on Air America Radio.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who am I to believe that the future we foresee lies in danger and the dangers increase? Who are we to demand that the leaders of the land hear the voices of reason and peace?
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, and we're talking with Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama. Arguably, if the election hadn't been stolen from him, that's currently the governor. And Governor Siegelman, one of the timelines that are out there suggests that this started in 1994 when Karl Rove was hired by the Business Council of Alabama to work with Bill Canary, whose wife initiated the prosecution against you as a federal prosecutor. But you suggested that, you know, around that time, or perhaps even before, we have about six and a half minutes, I think, left in this segment. I'd like to, as much as possible, just turn it over to you. I want to point out to our listeners, Don Siegelman, I before E, SIEGELMAN.org is Don Siegelman's website. There's a link to it off our homepage, TomHartman.com. There'll be a link to it off the homepage at AirAmerica.com. We will put as much of the audio from this interview up there as we can so that people can hear it. And in fact, the entire interview, of course, will be available in our podcast and those kind of things. But if you could just recap for us what happened and what you consider really the important points, the things you want people to be telling their friends and neighbors about. And also, we're on the air in all these California states. We're also on the air in WDTW in Detroit, which is John Conyers' home district, this moment live. What specific action would you like people to take? And, you know, where do we go from here? It's all yours.
Tom, first of all, again, I want to thank you and the sponsors of your program for helping to air this this story, because, you know, when I was convicted, they didn't waste any time. When they sentenced me, they put me in shackles and handcuffs and put me in the basement of the courthouse, and then took me to a maximum security prison and put me in isolation there. And then I was went to four other states. They took me from Atlanta to New York to Michigan to Oklahoma City, and then finally to Oakdale, Louisiana, which is not near any major media outlets, nor would they allow any interviews. Even 60 Minutes, they would not allow to come in and do the interview with me. So it's been helpful to have had you as an advocate for justice on Air America, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. But
thank you.
Yeah, I mentioned before the break that the restrictions on my travel are so severe that it, I think, clearly impinges upon my First Amendment right to speak, my ability to petition Congress or to raise money for my legal defense. So I have to request 30 days in advance before I travel to another state like Louisiana. These kinds of restrictions are so constraining.
Sounds like the Soviet Union.
It makes it virtually impossible for me to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So you couldn't go to Washington D.C. to petition Congress. You couldn't go and speak at a fundraiser as Karl Rove can do right now. This is horrible.
Not without giving notice and not without getting approval, and it, and in some cases, as I mentioned, it may take well more than 30 days. You know, it's just that most of us don't organize our schedules that far in advance, and I think this whole thing is geared toward shutting me down again, trying to prevent me from speaking, trying to prevent me from raising money, trying to prevent me from going to Congress. And I think that's the game plan. You know, the 11th Circuit let me out, but, you know, we're not going to let him speak. We're not going to let him get out and talk about this. So, again, right. I appreciate you letting me be on your show today.
Well, let's just recap what happened, sir.
Well, I think some of the high points are that Karl Rove and I had a run-in in 1994 when he was trying to steal his first election in Alabama for the Alabama Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Then in 1999, his right after my election as governor, Rove's client, then Attorney General, began a federal state investigation. And then in 2001, Rove's business partner, business associate, political partner, Bill Canary's wife, who had been approved by Bush, George W. As a U.S. attorney, began the federal investigation. When that investigation started to slow down, the person, the career prosecutor who was head of the criminal division, didn't think that there was a case worthy of pursuing against me, so they took him off the case and put Karl Rove's client's campaign manager's wife in that slot, and she then began to move the case forward. The first false indictment came upon the false testimony by a former FBI agent that was just a flat lie to the grand jury in the Northern District. The presiding judge of that district heard the case for about a day and a half until the government moved to dismiss all the charges with prejudice. That case was brought by Alice Martin, who is also a cohort of Bill Canary's and a close friend of Karl Rove's. When that case failed, Noel Hillman, who was head of the Department of Public Integrity, called the prosecutors to Washington and said, told them to go back and look at everything in the Sigelman case again. So then they brought new charges against me shortly after I announced I was running for re-election, and then brought me to trial 1 month before the Democratic primary in 2006. You know the story about the judge and the jury and the shackling and all that, so there's no point.
And the theft of the election, the discovery of all these thousands of votes electronically in the middle of the night when everybody had gone home except the Republicans that gave Bob Riley the governorship.
Yeah, and you know, we had won the election. We had a tough election because it was right after 9/11. Bush, President Bush, came into the state a couple of times. Lure, his wife came in. We had the secretary. We had a bunch of folks from Washington coming in campaigning.
Sir, we're just flat out of time. I'm sorry.
Listen, thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you. Don Siegelman, Don, S-I-I before E, donsiegelman.org is his website. Check it out. Help out. Thank you so much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
6 minutes past the hour. Well, as we suggested, not to like take credit for it or anything, but as I suggested 2 hours ago, Barack Obama needs to get out in front of or beyond, get out in front of this whole Reverend Wright at the National Press Club thing that was set up yesterday by a woman who is a rather outspoken advocate of Hillary Clinton, although we don't know if there's any connection between this and that campaign. And frankly, it doesn't. Frankly, I don't think it matters all that much. But Barack Obama is holding a press conference right now. He has said that he used the word angry. He said, you know, referring to what he saw yesterday in Reverend Wright's remarks, he said, what made me angry? He said and the things that he said made him angry was that Reverend Wright said that he was simply posturing politically. He said that anybody who knows him and is familiar with his political career knows that he is all about reaching across the divide and bringing people together. That's not posturing politically. That's what he does. And that he's not a person who's going to be affiliated with AIDS conspiracies or divisiveness. In fact, he specifically even disavowed Minister Farrakhan just now. He pointed out that Barack Obama did. Barack Obama also said that he understands that Reverend Wright was pained and angered, that he felt vilified and attacked. He said he understands that he wanted to defend himself, but this is not the way to do it. So it's interesting. That press conference is going on live as we speak. We just spoke with Don Siegelman. This is the high crimes and misdemeanors of Karl Rove, and this is a man, Karl Rove, who has spent literally his entire college career, his entire career since his days in college, doing political dirty tricks and stealing elections. I mean, his mentor was Don Segretti, you know, the Nixon's the crook in chief. And it is time that we seriously consider. Oh, it's long past time, frankly. I've been calling for this for 5 years or longer. Time that we seriously consider an aggressive move to restore the rule of law in the United States and to restore the primacy of the Constitution, to say once again, we do live under the Constitution of the United States. The President of the United States took an oath not to protect us from Islamo-fascists or from 19 wacky guys, whacked out guys with box cut. No, he took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. In the Constitution, it says that the President, when he is sworn into office, shall raise his hand, shall take an oath. And this is very straightforward. It's right there in Article 2 of the Constitution, where, in fact, let me find it. I'll give it to you verbally, or verbatim, rather. Before he enter on the execution of his office, he, the President, shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will try to the best of my ability. Now, notice what this is going to end with. To the best of my ability to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And you do not protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Fifth Amendment of which says that you have a right not to speak, you know, against yourself in a trial. The Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments, which say you have a right to a speedy trial, a trial by jury. You have the right to make bail. You don't defend the First Amendment of the Constitution, which says that you have the right to free speech. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which says that you have the right to privacy. You don't defend those things by doing what was done to Don Siegelman. You don't defend those things by having secret trials. You don't defend those things by disappearing people. You don't defend those things by murdering over 100 people in the process of torturing thousands of people. You don't defend those things by this long trail of abuses. To paraphrase Thomas Jefferson out of the Declaration of Independence, I mean, you know, this long train of abuses, lying us into a war, caging over a million votes in the 2000 and 2004 elections, stealing Florida, getting your cronies, three of whom had family members working on your campaign on the Supreme Court to flip the election in your favor. And then you hear this weekend we were greeted to the disgusting, despicable, filthy, I'm running out of adjectives, tragic spectacle of Scalia saying, well, you know, get over it. That's old history. This was a judicial coup. This was a coup. The summary executions, the willful killings, the assassinations, the violations of the Presidential Records Act, disposing of and destroying a million emails and the warrantless wiretaps that Bush at first came out and said, oh, well, you know, when we're talking wiretaps, we're talking always, we always get a warrant, you know, because and then when it was revealed that he was lying through his teeth, oh, well, we didn't need a warrant. We didn't really need a warrant because we had this presidential directive. And then when it came out that was against the law, oh, well, you know, we need to amend the FISA Act to make it legal what I did. And then when Congress says, no, we're not going to do that. Well, the Senate went along, but Nancy Pelosi, God bless her, The House of Representatives refused to go along, and now you got Republicans running around going, oh, the FISA Act is expiring. No, the FISA Act is alive and well, thank you very much. What expired was the immunity for Bush, or anything close to it. And so right now as we speak, George W. Bush and members of his administration can be prosecuted, along with the companies that broke the law and violated the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, by listening to telephone conversations. And I want to know how much farther it goes. And I think this is part of the reason why there's 5 million deleted emails, not just because they included the illegal prosecution of Don Siegelman and the illegal theft of an election in Alabama, but because they involved the illegal theft of elections all over this country. I want to know what happened in Ohio in 2004. I want to know what happened in Florida in 2000. I want to know what happened in 2002 and 2006. You know, I've seen a number of, and there's, I mean, no shortage of this. Go over to bradblog.com, Mark Crispin Miller's websites. You can Google them. MarkCrispinMiller.com, I believe, is the website. There's no shortage of these things. There's discussions of them constantly in the message boards over at TomHartman.com. We have a lot of links to them where, I mean, in all probability, there would have been 30 or 40 more Democrats elected to the House of Representatives and possibly one or two more senators if this kind of election fraud, not voter fraud, we're not talking the kind of stuff that Ann Coulter did, you know, voter fraud, registering, you know, at your real estate agent's house or somebody showing up who's not a citizen and voting. I mean, you know, gee, there were, what, 3 prosecutions for that in the last 2 years. And we've got to have the Supreme Court decide that people now have to have photo ID to vote, so that elderly folks like my mother, who no longer drives, therefore no longer has a valid photo ID, cannot vote. So what's going to happen to the vote in Florida that is reliably Democratic, the elderly vote in Florida? Well, forget that. The elderly vote in New York State that is reliably Democratic. Much, you know, what's good? Forget that. California, forget that. They can't vote anymore. What about people who live in urban centers where they don't, you know, people, my best friend in New York City, Jerry Schneiderman, I'm sure Jerry has a driver's license these days, but, you know, for the 30 years that I've known him, only a half a dozen years out of that did he own a car. I mean, I've known people in New York City who've spent their entire lives there and never used anything other than the subway and public transportation. You're actually a little crazy to own a car in New York City. And if you pretty much don't ever plan on getting a car, then why bother getting a driver's license? There's particularly, and this isn't the case with Jerry, but it's particularly the case in the African-American communities in large urban centers, particularly if you're working at a minimum wage job or if you're finding it hard to even find a job. You really don't have the money for a car. You don't have the money for insurance. You know, why go through the expense and hassle of even getting a driver's license? Many people don't. Well, they're not going to be able to vote now. So you can write off a good chunk of the African-American community. You can write off, you know, I mean, just the crimes of this administration, torturing people, violating habeas corpus, pushing through legislation when the Republicans controlled the House and Senate, the Military Commissions Act, stripping habeas corpus out of our bodies of law, when in the Constitution itself it says you can't violate habeas corpus except during time of invasion or insurrection. Torturing at home and overseas. You know, Sarah Taylor, Roe, violations of the Hatch Act. It just goes on and on and on. The crimes, literally the crimes of this administration. I would love to hear Hillary Clinton agree with Barack Obama's statement and repeat it in her own words that he said a few weeks ago that if there is evidence that crimes were committed by this administration, that the new administration will continue the investigations into those crimes. Because that's the only way it's going to happen. Hillary, we're waiting. 16 minutes past the hour.
Truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wanna shout out? Shout out loud. Why don't you all just come on out? And we can.
Barack Obama's still giving his press conference, just now saying that that his former pastor, Mr. Wright, who has since retired from the church, and whose comments have been repudiated by Barack Obama, saying that he thought in the Moyers interview that although Pastor Wright continued to say a few things that he considered offensive, at least it rounded out his personality. It gave a little more balanced view, he said. But he felt that yesterday at the National Press Club, this breakfast put together by this woman who's a supporter of the Clinton candidacy, that he caricatured himself, that he himself played into this cartoon, this stereotype. So, fascinating. Anyway, 22 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program, let me just remind you, powered in part by Teamsters for Change. Time for change in Washington. You can find out more at Teamster.org. And powered in part by you, our listeners. Letting our sponsors know that you're listening, patronizing their products, letting our radio stations know that you're listening, and, you know, your thoughts on the show. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Josephine in Clinton Township, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Josephine.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a case going on here in Michigan. An attorney is being accused of encouraging his campaign staffers to illegally contribute to Edwards' campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on trial right now. And the headline in this morning's Free Press is, "Agents Bullied Me, Lawyer Says." One of the witnesses has said that the agents bullied him and his family and tried to get him to testify against this attorney, Jeffrey Feiger.
Right. How?
While I am not a fan of Jeffrey Feiger's, if it were any other department but the Justice Department of this corrupt administration, I would wonder whether or not this harassment charge was true.
Right.
But because of the government that we have right now, the administration we have right now, I tend to believe everything bad about
right.
them.
Right. And how dare he try to raise money for a Democrat?
Yes. Yes.
We cannot have that.
And, Tom, let me tell you, I'm reading your book, What Would Jefferson Do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning so much, and you have taught me so much. I never went to college, and you have taught me so much about history. I can't tell you how grateful I am to you.
Well, thank you, Josephine.
There are so many topics I would like to talk to you about, but can I give you some of my anger right now?
Sure.
I've been listening to yours, and I think it's great. My anger right now is the Democrats are using that 60-vote majority as a cover. They can stand up and fight and make noise. They might lose the battle, but they might wake more people up. Maybe if they stand up and fight this administration, the newspapers will have to pay attention. The news media will have to pay attention. Because right now, I live in a Republican neighborhood, and half these people only listen to Fox, and they don't know what's going on in the real world.
Yeah.
And when you talk to them, they are amazed at some of the things you're telling them. Yeah. Sometimes I think they think I'm crazy.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Josephine, and I've been calling for a long time for Harry Reid, and so has Bernie Sanders, frankly, on this program on a number of occasions said, you know, Harry Reid, okay, if these guys want to filibuster a bill, let them stand there and talk, and if they've got to do like Strom Thurmond used to do and get a little hose and a bucket to put by their foot, fine, but let them stand there and talk. I mean, have a filibuster, have a real filibuster. You know, as Bernie said, he'll stay there all weekend, he'll stay there all night, he'll do whatever it takes. I think that Harry Reid has really blown a lot of opportunities, and it's like they said, right up front, Trent Lott said, you know, a year ago, we're going to obstruct all of the legislation, and then we're going to run against the Democrats as a do-nothing Congress. They have played right into the Republicans' hands. I absolutely agree with you. Josephine, I got to move along, but thank you so much for your calls and for your call and your kind comments. Sandra in Berkeley, California, listening on Green 968. Hey, Sandra.
Hi, Tom. I was so excited when you had Don Siegelman, and I've been following this pretty closely, and I've been very upset about this because, you know, they start taking people away. Next is going to be me, you know?
Yep. Yeah, this very much is a Pastor Niemöller moment for all of us, I think.
And I just wanted to say that it really concerns me. I want to say, first of all, I'm an American and I'm not afraid. You always love it when I say that.
Amen.
And Don Siegelman is an American and he's not afraid. And I agree that there's a lot of people that don't want to really accept what's going on. And I also agree with Don Siegelman when he says, or Governor Siegelman, may I call him?
Yes.
That we cannot clean up the mess until we accept what's wrong. And we cannot fix anything until we really accept what's going on. And I'm very concerned because I know that you think I'm, you know, conspiracy theorist and when I do this kind of stuff, but a lot of stuff that I've been saying for years, you are now saying, and I don't think I am. And how do we know that they can't just use the voting machines a little bit, like in Pennsylvania, where they had a lot of voting machines used, where they can't just tilt things slightly? I mean, we all know how easy that is if you know how computers work. And I'm just concerned. Yep. I mean, we have, if we don't have voting, if we don't have voting, real voting, we have nothing.
Yes, it is the beating heart of democracy. It is, to paraphrase Thomas Paine, it is absolutely. And to privatize it, to hand it over to private corporations and say, oh, you can do this in secret, even corporations that may have an agenda or an affiliation. Sandra, thank you for the call. May have an affiliation with a political party or for that matter, I mean, just voting machines in general that are hackable. We have demonstrated it. This is just, it's just crazy. It's wrong. And why is it that since 1998 in the United States, exit polls are no longer reliable, whereas they are still reliable everywhere else in the world? 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Four minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. And the press conference with Barack Obama is over. Some quick thoughts from the senator.
After seeing Reverend Wright's performance, I felt as if there was a complete disregard for what the American people are going through and the need for them to rally together to solve these problems. It now is the time for us not to get distracted. Now is the time for us to pull together. And that's what we've been doing in this campaign. And there was a sense that that did not matter to Reverend Wright. What mattered was him commanding center stage.
Yeah, number one. And this is, this is the kind of clear repudiation that I think is going to be absolutely necessary for him to, for Barack Obama to survive this politically, what his minister is doing.
Some critics have said that your sermons are unpatriotic. How do you feel about America and about being an American?
This is Robin.
I feel that those citizens who say that have never heard my sermons, nor do they know me. They are unfair accusations taken from sound bites and that which is looped over and over again on certain channels. I served 6 years in the military. Does that make me patriotic? How many years did Cheney serve?
Yeah, so, there's really two sides to this discussion. And one is that Reverend Wright, on many of these issues, is absolutely right. His timing, though, and some of his statements for many white Americans politically is a disaster for Barack Obama. And just to say it bluntly. And I think it's a tragedy that Barack Obama has to back away from this guy. But on the other hand, are other politicians being held to these standards? Is Ed Rendell, for example, because he's a Catholic, the governor of Pennsylvania, did anybody ever say to him, hey, were you ever in a church where the priest was accused of or convicted of molesting kids? I mean, those kinds of issues, not to the best of my knowledge. I don't think the issue ever came up. So in a way, it's like there's a very clear double standard here, and yet that's also the political reality. It's a tough one. Anyhow, back to your calls. 866-303-2270. Liz in Valley Glen, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Liz.
Oh, hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
I loved your rant earlier this morning after you spoke to Don Siegelman. I feel the same way, and I've been listening to you for a while, and as a result, I did call Congress. I called both of my representatives because both Karl Rove and Harriet Myers ignored the subpoena, and they can go out and arrest them, and they really need to do that. But I guess, unless there's a lot of sentiment in the country that they should arrest them, it won't be. But my question to you is, since Karl Rove and Scooter Libby were both complicit in the outing of Valerie Plame. And if we're in a time of war, when you out a covert operative, aren't you a traitor? Shouldn't they be in Guantanamo?
Yeah, by the standards of George Bush Sr., yes. So Karl Rove belongs in Guantanamo. If I didn't so strongly feel that Guantanamo should be closed down, if I had even one shred of me that thought that it was appropriate that Guantanamo exist, I would say Karl Rove should be there.
Yeah,
but we do have a federal prison system, and I think that he should have a number on his back.
But they should experience what they've propounded, you know? Let them try a taste of their own medicine.
No. No. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is something we've left behind. We don't torture people who torture others. If somebody murders somebody else, frankly, I don't think in our society we should even murder them. I think we should imprison them. We are a civilized people. If we're going to punish somebody, we inflict a civilized punishment upon them. These people are uncivilized. John Yoo, Karl Rove, George W. Bush, Don Rumsfeld, they have presided over the torture and murder of at least 108 people that we know of. And the killing of somewhere between 100,000 and 1 million Iraqis, the dispersal of 4.5 million Iraqis, the second largest refugee crisis on earth. These are crimes against humanity that rise to the level of they should be in the dock at The Hague. But their punishment should not be that they get tortured. Their punishment should be that they go to prison.
I agree with you on most of that. But, you know, they said it's not torture. So why don't they try it?
Because they're wrong.
Let them try it.
I understand, Liz. At the emotional level, I'm right there with you. You know, but what's good for the goose is good for the gander. But we have. I think the high ground here, and we have to hold to that high ground, is that we are a nation of laws. We honor the Constitution. We honor the treaties that we have, like the UN Charter. And the statements on human rights that have been made, that have the Geneva Conventions that have been repeated over and over and over again and amplified and rebuilt, particularly after World War II, and that we have to honor those. But Liz, thank you for your call, and I understand exactly how you feel. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington, listen on Talk 1090. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. Great show today. I want to give big props to Don Siegelman, who's fighting the good fight for all of us.
Yeah, amen. And go to donsiegelman.org and, help him out if you can.
Absolutely. And thanks for spending the whole hour with him. Listen, I want to speak directly to Obama supporters right now. Anybody who can get the ear of the senator, now is the time to give a landmark address on the issue of class in America. Newsweek has an issue out this week called Class and Race 2008, and he's their cover story. So it seems to me now is the time to break away. You know, you can respond to this thing. He already did that. Now is the time to go forward and do what he should have done before Pennsylvania, which is go in front of a shuttered factory, put up a big banner that says we can do better, and say, America, they have used class to divide us, and it has to stop. They did it with Katrina. They've done it with these voter ID laws, and the time has come to turn it around.
I think that's been the subtle subtext of much of his campaign, and I agree with you that it needs to no longer be subtle.
Absolutely.
He needs to come right out and say it. It needs to be, flat out there. And at that level, then he can, I don't think that he should be talking about it, and he wouldn't. It's not the kind of campaign he'd run. But, having one of his campaign surrogates or somebody on his campaign point out, that John McCain was born into a family of admirals and married a beer heiress worth $100 million and is flying around in her private jet and doesn't get it. What it means to be middle class or working class in the United States. So, there's a lot of different ways that we can deal with this, or that Barack Obama could be talking about it, and I think that that's one of them. Samantha in Waterford, Pennsylvania, you're outraged at the Democrats' outrage over right.
I am. I just, first of all, when the tidbits did come over YouTube and the right wing and that sort of thing, I thought, okay, where did it come from? I did look up the transcript. I did go to Trinity's site. I did look for other videos, and I got a much different picture of Reverend Wright.
Me too. Even the speech in which he said, "Goddamn America," if you listen to the 5 minutes that precede and follow that, it was a very articulate speech that made a lot of sense and with which
absolutely.
I would not disagree.
Absolutely.
But here's the problem. And this is why I don't think that Hillary Clinton should have ever walked into that issue. She should have just stayed away from him totally.
She's because, doing it to get rid of Barack.
I know, but it's the and it's the Republicans who are trying, who are using race to try to divide America, and who are using this to try and paint Barack Obama as you know, the black boogeyman, as it were. Yes. And that is a crime, and I am just horrified that the Clinton campaign would just go say, hey, yeah, we'll be part of that.
Well, I think we know. They've been co-opted. They've had their 16 years or so in Washington, and they're with the Republicans.
I continue to hope that
Hillary
is better than that.
Clinton is going on Bill O'Reilly.
I know.
And I really, you know, she voted for cluster bombs.
Yeah.
Samantha told us about the complete obliteration of the Middle East.
Of Iran.
Iran
Samantha, I'm going to stop you right there because I just, you know, and then I'll have a Clinton supporter say, now let me give you the 15 points about Obama. And that's not a debate, frankly, that I want to have on this show. If you want to talk about what was wrong with John McCain, fine. Or if you want to talk about what was good about Hillary Clinton or what was good about Barack Obama, fine. I don't think that just like you are protesting Clinton using right to tear down Obama, I am protesting you're using those issues to tear down Hillary Clinton in this campaign. Even though I disagree with her on all those issues, there's far more that unites us than there is that divides us with both of these candidates. There really and truly is. John in San Jose, California. Hey, John, we got about a minute before the break here. What's up?
Okay, real quick, Tom. What I think they should do is once Obama or Clinton becomes president, and hopefully it'll be Obama, and he's already said that he'll do this, is to instruct his attorney general, hopefully John Edwards, to put together a 50-state task force and look at every state and see what crimes have been committed, tie them together if need be, but find out what crimes have been committed in those states, and then pursue them, if indictments are necessary, go ahead and do them. There's been task forces in the past that have gone after different types of crimes, and this,
sure,
what has been going on here for 8 years, we know that there's a lot that has been going on. They even convicted at a state level those people, those Republicans in New Hampshire. You're absolutely right.
You're absolutely right, John. And they need to do it the way that they went after organized crime in the 60s and 70s. I mean, this needs to be. Let's bring back Bobby Kennedy's kind of crusades. Because this is organized crime in the Republican Party. Make no mistake.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sailing on from Pastor Wright.
I want to make absolutely clear that I do not subscribe to the views that he expressed. I believe they are wrong. I think they are destructive. And to the extent that he continues to speak out, I do not expect those views to be attributed to me.
Amen. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. You had stated earlier that your mother is 80.
Yeah.
And she cannot vote because she has no driver's license.
Right.
She can vote with a Michigan State ID card, which is available at any local Secretary of State office. My older sister had one, and she voted in every election.
Mm-hmm. How long do you have to stand in line to get that?
I don't know.
Because I grew up in Michigan. I know the DMV in Lansing. I'll tell you, it was an all-day project getting a driver's license when I lived there. But, yeah, okay, point made. And most states have provisions for a state ID as opposed to a driver's license. And now the move is going to be prove that you're actually a citizen. And so then it's going to be now my mom is going to have to find her birth certificate from 1927. I don't even know if she still has it. Here's the bottom line, Bernice. If you listen and if you listen to Paul Weyrich, he's a Republican strategist. He's the guy. He was the architect of the Reagan Revolution. He worked on the Bush campaign in 2000. He is the grand old man of the Republican Party. He was speaking before a group of Christian activists, Republican Christian activists in a church. This is about 10 years ago or so.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. See? That's what it's all about.
You know, my sister was 80, by the way, when she got hers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She did vote in every election. So.
Well, good on her. And you know, maybe mom can get out there and get one. I don't know. But what I do know is that this is all part of a campaign under the guise of election fraud,
of
voter fraud, which does not exist.
Of course.
To try to disenfranchise people and prevent them from voting. The more obstacles they can put in front of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Bernice. Yep. I appreciate the call. And, helping me keep this stuff straight. Ruth in Carlotta, California. Hey, Ruth.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad she brought that up. Along the same lines, I think this is a really good idea for an opportunity for activists to, in those areas where states are going to require these voter ID cards, to set up a website. I would contribute anybody that can take these folks to lunch, take them to the DMV and get their cards. I would absolutely give money to a cause like that. I think it's a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that, for example, illegal women voters should take on as a crusade. Well said, Ruth. Thank you very much. Mark in Ithaca, New York, listening at 1470 AM. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
What I called to talk to you about is I want to know what happened to all the great Americans. Where are all the people who are going to stand up and fight for what's right and for the Constitution and for America? Where are all of the senators and the congressmen? Why, I wonder, are they not doing anything?
I don't see anybody not doing anything. I see an enormous amount of obstruction going on by the Republicans. I mean, for example, with this most recent legislation that Rush Holt, the Democrat from New Jersey, proposed, that there be at least a paper trail from these phony electronic voting machines. All the Republicans in the committee said, sure, yeah, fine idea. And then they talked to their senior leadership in the party, and now they won't let the thing out of committee. It's not going to be voted on. The Republicans don't want even a paper trail that can be audited.
Maybe it's not that there's not enough going on. Maybe there's just not enough coverage. You listen to Air America, you hear this stuff, but you listen to any other news outlet, you never hear this stuff. All you hear is war. All you hear is propaganda.
Oh, I know. It's absolutely a problem in the United States because we have infotainment instead of news. Thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Diana in Olympia, Washington, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Diana.
Hi, Tom. I just quickly wanted to say that on Huffington Post, they had the gal who was sitting next to Wright yesterday at the press deal was a Hillary supporter and also helped him get that speaking engagement yesterday.
Right.
And
it's we
so
have
that sort of bodes kind of sadly for everything. But I'm just asking everybody out there, I sent a lot more money today to Obama because, in my opinion, he is being swift voted not only by the media, but by Hillary Clinton's and McCain's people. And this is a decent, seriously decent man. And I'm just really, I'm hurt that somebody could be, make him look that way.
Yeah. But I say once again to the Hillary Clinton campaign, tell me why to vote for you, not why not to vote for Barack Obama, because he sat in those pews all those years. Gary in Pittsburgh. Hey, Gary. We're just about to wrap it up here. Just about out of time.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
This is done by design. Reagan started in God rest his soul, in the early 80s, bringing religion into politics. My question and point is simply this. Do we want to move towards a theocracy, or do you want to maintain our democracy?
We're already halfway into a theocracy right now, Gary.
The right has found an issue.
But
let them be our own worst enemy? Let's get out and vote
Get them out.
And not just get out and vote. Get out there and get active. Get out and show up at party functions. Find out where your local Democratic Party is meeting and show up at the monthly meetings. Tomorrow, Pastor Thomas Robb, the national director of the Knights Party of the Ku Klux Klan. What do they have against any person of color with political power in America? And Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, about religion, voter ID, voter fraud. Should be an interesting day. I hear it here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.